This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! This is Santa Claus for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Ho, ho, ho! And do we have some prizes for you? Yes, we do here this week. Well, hello. This has just been a lot of fun. And what a year this has been, huh? 2020. Wow. Another week of this and we can put this stinker to bed here finally. Goodness sakes. But I want to wish everyone a happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas. And however you celebrate, I want to wish you the best holiday ever. I know that it's difficult to get together with loved ones. And my goodness, that we've been hearing a lot of bad news here recently. But as I said to begin with, or as Santa said, that we do have some prizes for you as well that we're going to announce on the back end of this podcast. A couple of things that have been given away, actually more than a couple, quite a few things that have been given away. And we have some winners to announce on the backside of this podcast. So stay tuned after we're finished to see if your name was drawn and or to hear some of your friends perhaps whose names were drawn. If you didn't get to enter this contest, well, perhaps there will be another opportunity for you in the future. Just make sure you subscribe to our pod letter so this way you know about the podcast and you don't get left behind. This week, we want to again give thanks to all of our listeners around the world who listen to us each and every week. And we thank you guys so very much for coming back, because I know there are so many other things you could be doing with your time. But coming and listening to these amazing conversations with fantastic conjurers just really warms my heart this time of the year and all the time. And also, I want to thank all of the friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who have given their financial donations and pledges to help keep this podcast going. And in particular this week, we want to welcome Joe Devlin as our most recent friend of the Magic Word. Thanks, Joe, for your donation on PayPal. And if you would like to learn more about how that you can help us during this year and into 2021, then please go to themagicwordpodcast.com and just click on the little tab that says Become a Friend of the Magic Word. And there you will find out more information. Thanks. Well, this is a holiday issue right now, and this is one that I have been kind of putting off for a while. But before we begin, I want to take a little bit of sip from my hot cocoa here, just a minute. Wow, that is hot. Ah, yes, indeed. Hot cocoa on a cold, wintry evening here as we get into Christmas Eve here this evening. This is December the 24th that this is being broadcast. And again, that we have just a wonderful opportunity here to kind of hear about what's been going on during this past year. Now, I have been avoiding talking on the podcast about current events because I would like for these podcasts to really be timeless. That is, that they would be just as fresh when you hear them in 2030 as they are in 2020. And I don't want to be having a kind of some depressing words when we're talking about such a horrible time when people have been without work. And if somebody in the future will be listening to some of these from the archives and then they hear about what a bad time it was, they will be reminded of that and they don't want to listen to the rest of the podcast, which would be an error because there are a lot of good tips and good conversations and some really interesting and entertaining tidbits that we give along the way during these conversations. So again, I've really avoided being too current on this, but over the last 30 weeks consecutively that I have been doing a Magic and Martini Thursday virtual happy hour on Facebook and on YouTube, and all of those episodes are available that you can go back in the archives there on Facebook, but easier still, if you just go to youtube.com/Texas Magician, there you can find those, and it's under the playlist for Magic and Martinis, and you go back and watch some of those different videos that we had with different guests every week talking about current events and what it is that magicians are doing and how that everyone has been coping with this and how it affects our business, whether it's going to be cruise ships or trade shows or restaurants or cocktail parties or even on stage. Everyone has just a little bit different way of how that they have been handling this along the way. And also in Las Vegas, they certainly have had their share of troubles along the way then as too. Well, of course, this is the holiday season, and that every year it seems that we now have already established this tradition, and we have to visit with Murray Sawchuk. My good buddy Murray has been very busy, and he's been continuing to work actually here recently at the Tropicana at the Laugh Factory there. And according to one of the newspapers, that he's the only magician working on the Strip. And he talks about that. There are some other magicians working in Las Vegas, certainly, but not on the what's called the Strip. And we'll talk about that then, too. So there are some things I just think that would be kind of interesting that you'd like to hear about current events and where we are right now as of December 24th, 2020, and what's been going on, particularly in Las Vegas, and how it's affected the entertainment business out there, magicians in particular, I guess. And so I thought you'd like to get caught up to hear what Murray has been doing. There have been some different rumors about what he's been doing as far as landscape business to supplement his magic business. But anyhow, that's all discussed here this week. So I'm going to step out of the way and introduce you to my friend and yours. Please say Merry Christmas to Mr. Murray Sawchuk here on The Magic Word. Well, what would Christmas be on the Magic Word Podcast if we didn't have our friend and our family from Las Vegas joining us? And here we have him, Murray Sawchuk. Hey, Murr, how are you? Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Scott. How are you doing? How's life been treating you this year?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Despite all of the pandemic and everything that we've been going through, this has been just one crazy year of 2020. Certainly, if this was not the way that it was supposed to turn out for any of us. I remember where I last left you. I think I was planning on coming out probably in March and working and taking you up on your offer there to do a few minutes there at the Trop with you. And then we got shut down in March. Basically,
yeah.
So, and that was kind of when you shut down too, I guess.
Yeah, you're going to come out and do some spots in my show and stuff like that. So, and the offer is still obviously always open. So,
well, thank you very much. We really haven't talked on the podcast about things that have been going on during this past year. I did one earlier in the year that was about coronavirus when we were kind of getting into this, and this was talking with some of the people who were cruise ship magicians and I think Vegas magicians, different things that were happening with different people in different parts of the country and how that this whole thing was affecting them. And we really have not talked about that nor addressed that in any of the podcasts since the one earlier this year. And so I thought it was kind of important here in this holiday season as we are recording this and releasing it then on Christmas Eve on December 24th of 2020, after we've already gone into this now for like about 9 months and kind of almost given full birth, I think, to this whole COVID thing. So let's kind of go back, I guess, earlier in the year, as far as like in January and February, when we really didn't know what was going to be happening. And everything in Las Vegas was still going gung-ho and everything. And you're working at the Trop. And what else was happening? Were there some new shows that were just opening around that time or anything that you can remember?
Yeah, there's lots going on. I mean, you know, as everyone talks about now, oh, my God, 2020 is going to be my best year ever. Well, you know, after the last 9 months, now you realize it's probably going to be your best year ever.
Right.
But we didn't know that. So it's very funny how everyone says that now because it's always hindsight, right? But yeah, everything's rocking and rolling. I mean, I know for myself and my fiance, Danny, personally, we were rocking it. You know, my fiance is Danny Elizabeth. She's the host of Crazy Girls at Planet Hollywood. And then I have my own show at Tropicana. We were doing 5 days a week. And then I also signed on to do another show, a show called Fantasy at the Luxor. And I was doing the comedy guest spot there and still am. Which is basically a 15-minute spot there at the Luxor. And so it was great. You know, we were three different shows on the Strip in one whole household, which is pretty unbelievable,
yeah.
You know, let alone having one, along with other shows in Vegas. I know there's a show called Extravaganza just getting ready to open at Bally's. And it's basically Extravaganza was like a show of back, something similar to like the 80s, where Splash over at the Riviera, which, you know, Shimada used to be in, and Jason Byrne was in, and a lot of other magicians. And it's a variety show, motorcycle acts, showgirls, acrobats, a typical kind of classic variety show in Vegas. And this is being produced from a company, I believe they're from Tel Aviv or Israel, and they just were about to open. Then they shut down. Well, ironically, now they are back open in a massive theater. But see, in Vegas right now, our stipulations into the CDC and everything else is we're only allowed groups of 50 people together, 6 feet apart. Social distance and all that. And with my show, because it's a comedy club, and I only have a very small overhead and staff, I can open and still be successful. Extravaganza, though, they're actually open at Bally's, and they only have 50 tickets allowed to be sold, and they're still open. How they're making a dollar, I don't know, because their overhead is astronomical. But I think they also have good capital. I think the producer does want to just keep pushing forward. So when things do come back, they're already in the rotation and they're already rolling. You know what I mean? And if you have that kind of capital, you can do that.
Right.
But a lot of people, you know, don't.
You know? You were saying that was the Riviera, and of course the Riv has since been imploded.
Well, the Riviera, I'm just using that as an example of what this show is. So the Riviera show is a show called Splash. And a lot of those shows back in the day, Enter the Night, Splash, all those were Follies, Jubilee, were all variety shows. So this new show that's opened that's called Extravaganza, which just opened at Bally's here in Vegas and still open right now.
Yeah.
It's one of the only shows. It's not similar to the one at the Riviera that back in the day, as we remember the 80s, you know, with seven different acts, you know. So they're open now. So they're open right now. Extravaganza is open. I'm open. Tate Face is open right now. And right now I'm the only magician working on the Las Vegas Strip, which is unheard of, I think, since the 1940s, since I think Jack Codell started the El Rancho, you know?
Yeah. When you say that you're the only one who's working on the Strip right now, you mean physically the Strip, because I know that we have James DeMayer, who is working, doing his Martini and Magic show, but he's at the Mint. Is that downtown? Is that in Fremont, or where is the Mint?
Oh, the Mint's a great place. It's a bar. It's a little bar off the Strip, and it's a little bar. It's, I think the Mint is, I don't know if they
kind
have
like the Thunderbird?
Well, no, the Thunderbird was actually on the Strip. The Thunderbird was actually on Las Vegas Boulevard. So what they consider it, like anything, when you play West End in England, you actually play the West End. And the West End, as you know, is probably 4 to 6 block radius of the theater district, you know? And like when you play Broadway, you have to play Broadway. You know, if you play 3 blocks off Broadway, you're not playing Broadway. They call that off Broadway. And then if you're really far off Broadway, meaning like 10 or 12 blocks, you're usually called off Broadway. And those are very common terms. It's not terms I'm making up. But when you say you're playing Broadway, and when Copperfield played Broadway, he actually played Broadway, you know. Monday's Night Magic is in New York, but it's not on Broadway. That would be called off-Broadway or off-off-Broadway, you know, because if you ever performed there or seen the place, it's a beautiful, at least when I played there, it was a church converted into a theater, you know. So that would be considered off-off-Broadway because it's not on Broadway, yet it is in Manhattan, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, there's tons of magicians performing, you know, I think in Reno, you know, off their Strip. And things like that, but so it's kind of like saying, you know, I'm the only magician on the Strip performing, which it is, which is kind of cool. Somebody wrote that up a few weeks ago. I didn't say that, and I didn't know that because I know all the magicians work, and I assumed, you know, the other magicians like Shin Lim or Matt Franco were somehow, and I heard Matt Franco was going to be opening as well, but I don't know if he is with this new rule of 50 people, because that's the hardest thing. But no, James Newman is a great act, and he's had his show on and off over at the Mint, and he was at Thunderbird before that. And I know I helped him a few times trying to get into a couple other properties in town because, you know, I've been here a long time, and I'm dear friends with a lot of the people. So, but as far as I know, his show is still going, but it's not on the Strip, no.
And another one would be Alain New, and I know he was working over at the old Hooters. What is that called? I think it's called
Oyo. Oyo. O-Y-O. Oyo. I believe it's a Japanese-Asian company now, and I think he might have moved to a place called Alexis Park. A buddy of mine produces shows over there, a guy named Pete Housley, dear friend, and he worked with me at Planet Hollywood years ago. And he's trying to bring in acts there as well. I believe Alain New is over at that property. And once again, that's not on the Strip. That's off the Strip. So, you know, like I said, it's kind of like saying people who are doing magic on Fremont Street, which I got a couple of friends who perform on Fremont Street, like Chris Randall and all that. Well, you know, and you can say you're playing Vegas, but you're not playing the Las Vegas Strip, you know. So it's one of those things. It's one of those, I think, the way it's balanced and how you sell yourself.
Speaking of Chris and some of the guys, I wonder, is Chris still working over there? I just heard from him the other day. We were talking about maybe he was interested in doing a virtual lecture tour and might start getting that going. But I didn't at the time ask him about how he's doing as far as working on Fremont, because I know that was his turf for a long time. Have you seen him, or is he still working there, or do you know anything? Or
I don't know. I have not heard from him for years. You know what I mean? Years ago, I put him in my show as a guest act. And then we kind of had a falling out just because, you know, he's got his demons now and then. And I love Chris to death. He's he's actually a really, really phenomenal magician. He's very good at sleight of hand. He loves the art, you know. But, you know, sometimes his communication skills over the world of magic is hard, you know. And so we lost contact over the last couple of years. But as far as I know, he might be still down there, you know. But he's a great act and he knows his craft.
Right.
And I always wish him well, you know, but I haven't heard from him. You know?
Well, you were also talking about some of the shows that were going to be like the larger extravaganzas that I remember. Hans Klock also had a large show. Wasn't he working in a theater? It's like about 2,000 seat theater or something, or?
Well, okay, so about 7-8 years ago, he was at a theater. It was an 8,000-seat theater.
Wow.
Called the Planet Hollywood Theater. Now it's called Zappos Theater. It changes its name all the time. Whoever wants to spend more money and have their name on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Planet Hollywood. It's a big arena theater. It's where Britney Spears had her show and Christina Aguilera, Lionel Richie, Backstreet Boys. And you can dumb that theater down. You can take the top mezzanine has 2,000 seats, so you can dumb it down to 6,000. And then you can actually bring the sides in a bit, and you might be able to get it down to 3,000 or 4,000. But Hans Klock did his show there, and you know, I remember seeing it. The smartest thing he ever did was bring in Pamela Anderson as his magic assistant.
Oh yeah.
And no magician in the history of magic has ever thought about bringing a co-star in bigger than them. First of all, because of our egos, and second of all, it's not always the best business move. But Hans is very smart because, you know, and I love Hans. He's a dear friend, and he's from Holland, very famous star over there. In the States, he's not that famous. But so we hired somebody that was equally as famous as him in Holland, which would be Pamela Anderson. And so she drew people, and it was really an interesting press bump he got. I mean, anytime I saw the show, he probably only had maybe 300 or 400 or 500 people in there.
Wow.
And that's a big theater to have that less of people. But that's a lot of people to have at any show every night in Vegas. It's kind of, you know, it's a size thing.
Sure.
So then he went back home, did some touring and all this other stuff. Then he came back and he had his show over at the Excalibur Hotel, which is right across the Tropicana, in a room that holds, I want to say it holds about 450 or something like that. I might be off by 100, but a dear friend of mine owns it, who owns Thunder from Down Under, which is in that room. So he had his show there as well. But what I've heard is he sent a lot of his equipment back, and he's back in Holland, and so is his cast and crew and everything, because once again, it's all about that overhead, you know, and he had tons of billboards up. He had a lot of money. So you know, once again, like I've told you this a lot of times, and everybody, the way to survive in Las Vegas is to have a low overhead, you know.
Right. Well, it's just I had heard someone talking about how that the problem would be of trying to fill the theater, or even if it wasn't filled, let's say a 2,000-seat theater that you may only put 500 people in, that still has a lot of people. But now that with the social distancing and everything that you have to do for theaters, that each time that they would clear the theater, then it would have to take some time to go in and then spray and clean all the seats and everything. And then for people to be standing in line socially distant and for them to go through at a certain time, and then be seated and then wait for the next group or a few people to come in and be seated further apart and everything, that it would probably take about 2 hours between shows in order to exit the theater, clean it, and reseat and get ready for the next show. So it'd be 2 hours between the shows. And I thought, well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. I know I went to, for an example, the Houston Symphony, and whenever I had tickets, that they sent me something in advance saying that your seating time will be between 7:20 and 7:40. So arrive at this time, so this way that you're not having to wait in line to be 6 feet behind everybody else, and we will let that group in, group C or whatever it is, during that time period. And then when you go through, of course, they're taking your temperature and everything else and whatnot, and you have to wear your mask the whole time or the ushers will come and escort you out. You know.
Yeah.
So there've got to be just...
It's pretty strict. I mean, so I just... The first show I started back with this pandemic was about 4 weeks ago, I guess. And I was lucky enough because Danny, who is my fiance and love, you'll see her on my Instagram posts and everything else, and she, like I said, her show hasn't gone back yet because of this. Her showroom is a very small cabaret. So right now we have this rule where you need to be 25 feet away from the stage.
Okay.
And then once the audience is 25 feet away, you then have to be 6 feet apart. Well, some people, that puts them into the parking lot, you know,
right,
in the showroom. So her showroom is a cabaret, and it's not a very wide or deep room. So within that, they couldn't really make it work until that's related, that boundaries expand a bit better. But
is that a city or state requirement as far as the distance?
It's a state requirement, as far as I know, for the state of Nevada.
Okay.
Or our governor Sisolak. So that's what we have here. And then with my show, the other show I'm in, it was just Fantasy at the Luxor. We have about a 380 seat theater that they're normally in, but they're lucky enough we got bumped to the Luxor Theater, which is the old Run Theater, or if you want to go further back, the old Criss Angel Theater, which holds about 1,500
sure
seats, and it's empty. Well, so
wow,
because MGM's so worried about health and safety, they moved that show and Carrot Top's show. So Carrot Top's the early show, the comedian. And then Anita Mann's show, which she's the producer of it, which is called Fantasy, that's the late show. So we could have a maximum of 250 people in that theater. That was the last, before this 50-person regulation was in, we had the 250-person regulation. And that lasted for about 2.5-3 weeks. So it was great because Danny got to come into the show. I got to do some of my bigger illusions. And it was nice. It's a beautiful theater to walk you out on. But once again, people would come into the theater, have a certain time to be seated. They would have to be 6 feet apart, and then they'd be seated individually. And realistically, because that theater was so big and we were only allowed to have 250 people in there, we could actually have more distance between all the seats just for safety. Why not? You know, if we can be safer, let's do that. And then we got the new thing that passed about 2.5 weeks ago, and it's been extended now to January 15th, which is we got to be 25 feet from the front, and then we're only allowed 25% of the capacity of our room or a maximum of 50 people in the room. And so, unfortunately, with Carrot Top and Fantasy, they need more than that to pay the bills. So they're on a pause till January 15th. But yet, at the Tropicana, you know, I only need about 5 tickets to break even because I have such a low overhead in staff.
Right.
So 50 people paid is wonderful, and I can make it work, and we can be safe and spaced out.
So regardless of the size of the theater, so if you had a 2,000-seat theater, they only will still allow 50, just 50 people in?
Correct.
Wow.
We're not allowed groups of 50 or more to gather.
Wow.
So that's
now,
like,
whenever,
you know,
whenever you are seating people, do you, let's say they're a group, let's say it's a husband and wife, or there are two couples or something, do you seat them together, or do each of them have to be social,
no,
separated?
They're allowed to sit together. You can sit together up to groups of four, I think, two to four at that point, or even six, but you're all responsible for your own group. So when you buy your tickets online, you can buy them in that package or that group. Even when I comp tickets, which now I haven't comp tickets all season because we're selling out every night because it's only 50 people, so it's not that hard to sell out, thank God. But yeah, you come in as your group, and you're responsible for your own health and your own group, you know. But if there is a break in the tickets, and the way they sell the tickets, they sell them in that order. So as the tickets are bought in groups of two, four, or six, that dictates the next where the next person's going to sit because you need that distance from those people.
Well,
it's really like playing Tetris.
It would be like playing Tetris, exactly. I was talking with my good friend Dave McGee because he has shows that he does. It's a one-man show here in Texas, Fort Worth and Dallas area, and he seats people that are within groups of two, four, or six people, and then he has to put the chairs further apart, and because the way that the tickets are sold online, it's exactly like Tetris because he said it's not like just filling up the theater. You've got to make room for everybody, and then, okay, well, now because you have six people instead of two people, that means you're going to have to adjust, and maybe the people are going to sit behind them and at an angle, whatever. Yeah, I just think that the whole way of trying to sell tickets to get people seated properly within these regulations has got to be tough.
Yeah, 100%. But once again, it becomes one of those things where everything, as you buy a ticket, it's a shifting grid, you know. But once again, if you know patterns and you got a program, you could easily set that up. So as each ticket is sold, it just shifts to what's available. And that's just the way it has to be.
Sure.
And with 50 tickets, it's kind of easy. If you're selling 1,500, well, that's another problem. You know what I mean? So, you know.
So. When you're working and you're talking about having low overhead then as well, are you four-walling or are you two-walling with the theater? Or I mean the?
Well, what I'm doing is basically for my production thing, I am produced with my company along with Laugh Factory. So we have a joint production. So we go in together, we come out together. So I'm not renting or spending money at all. It's an equal amount of, so they normally call that in the business a two wall. And that's where basically you get a theater and advertising for free. You bring your show in for free and you split profits all around on whatever percentage split you want. A four wall is basically where you rent, four walls of a building and you do your own show. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a pay or play type thing, which basically Vegas is become that. Which has changed a lot of the way they're hiring entertainers and who's in the business now. But for me, all my deals have always been a two-wall type deal or a guarantee just because it's the way I've always believed in things and it works for me, you know. But everyone has their own thing or how eager they are or whatever they want to do. But also it helps. You know, I talk to a lot of people who are used to getting guarantees and being in variety shows going, well, I'm going to come to Vegas and have my own show. And I'm like, well, good, go for it. He says, well, who do I call? You know, who's booking and who's paying? I said, who's booking and who's paying? I said, well, those are two different worlds. It's not 1980 anymore.
Right.
And a lot of these people who won a couple of awards in the magic field think they can have their own show. And I said, well, how many people follow you on YouTube or social media? Or if I put your poster up, can you sell, 500 tickets? Well, yeah, people like to come to a family magic show. I said, no, I'm talking about your name. When I put your Joe Schmo on the thing, I said, how many people are going to come see Joe Schmo? That's where it's at right now. The beautiful thing about, and I can say this, I did cruise ships for 18 years. The beautiful thing about being booked in Asia in a variety show that says magic or from Hollywood or from Las Vegas or being on a cruise ship is you have 1,800 people that are trapped on a tin can that have nothing else to do because the buffet is closed for an hour and they want to go see a show and they enjoy the show. And then, of course, later they walk around and go, oh my God, you're better than David Copperfield. I'm thinking, well, okay, hold on. First of all, Copperfield's a legend. He's phenomenal, right. And he wouldn't do a cruise ship. And they're very excited they saw something for free and didn't have to pay a ticket. And that's a very different avenue than putting a poster up and trying to sell a ticket and make a buck. And that really shows your worth a little bit. And I think in this day and time, exactly as we speak right now, nothing's more true to that right now. Because I see a lot of my friends who basically put all their eggs in one basket, which is they did cruise ships for 10 months a year, made a fortune, like we've all done, at least I did. But when you go on one of those areas, whether it be in Asia for 5 years and work in a variety show at a resort, or you go on a cruise ship, they're not necessarily buying your name. They're buying your talent. They're buying that you have a great brand in the sense of your tricks work and you're funny and you're safe and you're not offending anybody and you do the job, for their guests. But when you actually have to go on the streets and put up a poster and sell your tickets for a name or a brand that you think you've created, that's the real test of your star status or if you can sell a ticket or survive under your name than just being a magician,
I've always loved what you had said to me many years ago about how that people will advertise in Las Vegas, and you may not know a name until you get to Vegas, and then after you do, you see their name everywhere. But when you get outside the city limits, all of a sudden they're nobody again.
Yeah, we talked about that a few times. I know you've come hung out my house many times, and we've been driving around. You know, who's that guy? I'm like, he's famous until you hit Prim.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know what Prim is 35 miles outside of Las Vegas. And it's basically the border of California and Nevada. And there's two hotels there and an outlet mall. And if you drive there and you drive basically a quarter of a mile on the other side of California, you can actually buy a lottery ticket because they don't sell lottery tickets in Nevada because we're a gambling state.
Uh-huh.
So Prim is kind of this border little town that's owned by the Prim family. And that's the joke, because, you can come in here. And if you have a lot of money, I can make you famous in two days here by putting up 10 billboards. I can buy your cover of magazine for you, and I can buy you some good articles that make you look great and make you a star overnight. But it's going to cost you a good, $120,000.
Yeah, you have to have some deep pockets to begin with just to stay there for 6 months.
That's right.
Certainly, I think it would be very difficult. Well, again, going back to the beginning of the year, the thing started out pretty good. In fact, I think it's the last time that physically we were together. We had the SAM convention. I believe it was in February, I believe.
Yep.
We came out early, got a chance to spend some time and went out to breakfast and whatnot.
Yep.
And enjoyed all that. And seemed like things were on track for, as you say, the year to go well. And I know then people had contracts for cruise ships and everything else that completely just all fell apart because everybody was thinking, okay, well, maybe this will be about 2 weeks or so. And we were all optimistic that we're going to beat all this. And then before long, that took a while for people to start embracing the, and some never did, the virtual or the digital world, that is, of performing and lecturing online. So that now that it is a pretty commonplace for most people to do that, and there are still some who have resisted. I've not seen you do any of the virtual things. And I want to talk about that a little bit because I've always considered you the king of the social media because you talk about Instagram and other kinds of, TikTok and Facebook and et cetera, that, the millions of subscribers that you have as followers over there. But I have not seen you actually do any virtual shows per se.
Yep.
You don't stream your shows from the laptop or anything like that. Have you been consciously thinking about that or made the conscious decision not to enter that world or what?
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up because I haven't. I've done two or three shows at the beginning, once we realized we were in for a little bit of a longer haul. Because, remember, my last date of performing was March 15th, and we thought we were going to just take a two-week break, enjoy that for a hot minute and then get back to life and 9 months later. So I'd say about a month in, I did a YouTube live. I did a Facebook live because those are all monetized on my platforms. And we did good. You know, we did 12 or 15,000 views or whatever the heck it was. That's not hard to do when you have, you know, almost a couple million followers on those platforms. But my problem is, you know, first of all, magic is a pain in the neck to do on TV or stream because, you know, it's not like a song where you can get it balanced right for a record or an album. So it almost sounds better when it's recorded and in your car because you have all the elements tracked in and you've never heard Barry Manilow or Justin Bieber sound better because it's pretty phenomenal when you can do that. That's a bonus of music. Magic is a visual art. So, you know, when you see stuff on TV, when you see stuff online, unless it has an interesting hook, it's one-dimensional, and magic is three- or four-dimensional. You to see that live, to see somebody cut in half or a coin vanish or whatever it might be, that's really the strength of our art. So anything less than that, it always kind of devaluates how great that is. Now, I'm always jumping on platforms, and I love the social media thing. I've been on YouTube now for almost exactly 5 years now, and we've done very well. And we're on TikTok, and we're on Facebook, and all this other stuff. And we just started a new thing. We just filmed the last 2 days. We're going to launch in January a new angle. Because for the last 5 years, for people who know my stuff, I've been doing cop pranks, police pranks, parking pranks, things that get people's attention. And after 5 years, things run its course, and we have over 500 of those videos that we're still licensing and sending and selling. But now we're going to change our whole vein again, which we have to, which I'm doing.
Yeah.
But the reason I haven't done so many Zoom shows or anything like that is I've been offered to do a few corporate shows, which I have done here and there that are not public. And I don't mind that because it's a guarantee, and I'd be more than happy to perform for any company. I'd love it, you know. But there's a lot of those guys doing that as well. But the other reason is if you want to see me online, you can just put my name or even spell my name wrong. And you got more than 100 pages of more stuff than you ever want to see. And the videos that we create for YouTube and Facebook, I believe they're so well done for the format and genre that we've made them for. There's no way I could copy that live on a Zoom to make it that interesting and creative. Because we put so much time and effort into the cop pranks, the parking pranks, and that. So, yeah, I can do a trick right here and make it really entertaining.
Right.
I can do 2 hours right now if you want me to. And it's lovely, but nothing's going to be as entertaining as seeing one of my videos online. And not that they're the end-all, be-all. I'm just comparing it against myself.
They're better produced, and you spent more time putting those together.
Well, it takes a minute with the music and the timing and the sound bites and the clip and everything. And there's no editing. And the magic's done in real time like you do on Zoom. So I'd be more than happy to set my house up, which I've done a few times, with the lighting and do it right and have a fun show, which me and Lefty, my guest act, have done a few times, along with Danny, who's filmed us. And I don't mind doing that, but I don't want to put all that effort into that for when the world comes back. Mm-hmm. We're going to want live entertainment. We're going to want all this stuff. And look, I can create a trick right now for you and me.
Right.
The camera only has one eye, and I can blow your mind as you can blow my mind.
When it's one-dimensional, absolutely.
Oh, right. It's beautiful. I mean, my God, I could be, you know. But I don't want to waste 6 months creating 4 or 5 tricks that are going to blow your mind right here, right? Mm-hmm. But when I go on stage, if I have somebody sitting to my right 2 feet or to my left,
I can't
do the trick.
Right.
I'd rather still create items and ideas that when the world does come back, or like right now, thank God I'm performing on stage, that I can do on TV, I can tour with, so that's where my focus has been. And also my focus has been on creating, I wrote a children's book this year as well, which we're getting illustrated at the moment, and we're going to release next year. And then also, we've written a couple of TV pilots that are being pitched in Canada. And here right now. So that's where my focus has been on creating that stuff, because that stuff, whether the world comes back or not, I can still do. And I can do in the capacity of the quality I want to send out there for whether the world's at a standstill or not, because it's television and we always need TV.
Well, that's a very good point right there as far as the quality of the product that you are putting out there. If you can spend more time and putting that into your show, into making that better, that's what people see. And then whenever that you try to do something one-dimensionally, virtually, with rare exception, and I'm saying I can count on one hand the number of people that I've seen perform who have taken the time and effort not only to script a show and to do something that works works virtually, but also their background, their lighting, their sound, and the switching of the cameras and having someone to produce the show, etc. For the most part, it just kind of looks like that you're working out of your closet. I mean, it looks like what it is. And as a result, I think that diminishes your brand if you're not doing it professionally, because they're used to seeing someone who they think is, quote, a celebrity, like Hollywood style. And I've seen some of these people who have been on talk shows, you know, talking from home, and it just looks like that's what they are. They're just sitting in their on their couch or something with something in the background that is not particularly visually appealing. And it, I think it diminishes their brand to see them in that kind of light, if you will, without their makeup or whatever, as opposed to what you normally would see them on in the movies or on television, on film or whatever. Likewise, a magician that's used to seeing on stage, or, you know, coming over and being enchanting when they're doing close-up or whatever that it would be. But to see someone then that's going to be raw at, in a home situation, it's like, eh, there's something off about that. You know what I'm saying?
100%. And I'm always about being true to the art form, being true to the person I'm listening to or talking to, whether it be a group of people or just you and I, and being pretty transparent. So my explanation of that is, when I've done any of my Zooms at home or my live stuff, and there's a couple online people can go look at, because I can't get the same quality that I get on national television or Pawn Stars or even my YouTube videos that are produced. You know, we go and shoot them. They're edited. They're balanced. You can hear my voice. We bring the volumes up. So it's a nice video, even though it may look guerrilla style or haphazard. That's the style that we're shooting, you know, and that's what I want you to see, because I want you to feel like you're on the street with me when I'm getting, you know, in trouble by a cop or a parking attendant or whatever. But at home, my problem with, and one of the perfect people who are really good at Zooms, and you should interview sometime, is Chris Funk. He's a dear friend of mine. He's a phenomenal magician.
I'm going to talk to Chris. In fact, I think when I was at your home, you know, last time, that or time before, that Chris and his wife were there. I think
Charity,
That they had just, I think you had finished doing shooting the Masters of Illusion for Gabe Blackstone or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's phenomenal, and he's like that. He's very on the tech side. He knows what to, and his Zoom shows are bang on, and he's worked hard at it. He spent 3 or 4 months figuring out cameras and mics. And he's one of the few that are very good at it. See, but here's my problem with anyone who's doing these Zoom shows. They're trying, with the lighting and the curtains and all that, they're trying to create a quality that I don't believe you can get like what we see on a national TV show, right?
Right.
So my
right.
problem is, if I can't create that, and I know your viewers can't see me right now, you know what I look like, but anyone who's been to my home and before I've left my house, I'm always in my robe, drinking my coffee. I haven't shaved. My hair hasn't changed much because it kind of just stays up like it is. But I'm in my robe. And to be honest with you, I would do a close-up magic show or a Zoom show like this.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way I am right now, because if I can't give you the quality of a national TV show or what my YouTube videos are edited like, I want to go the complete opposite. And I want to show you a version of me you'll never see because –
I like
in
that.
This world.
Yeah.
So I want to be in my robe. So when I do my couple of live shows that I have done, it's give me 1 second. My dogs are just
moving. Hold on.
Right?
Yeah.
They're downstairs. Hang on 1 second. Give me 1 second. Hey, Danny. Can you control them, please? We're good? Perfect. Sorry about that, Scott.
Okay.
This is exactly what I mean. Real life. This, you don't get this on TV, baby. but it's exactly my point, ironically. But like, you know, right now I'm sitting here talking to you on Skype. You can see me. But I'm in my robe, in my office, haven't shaved, drinking my coffee. But this is a side that I feel is a benefit of Zoom, that if you're a fan of mine and you don't know what I really am like at home, I would invite you into this. Just because that's a rare occasion. You would never get to see me like this. And it's also a rare time in the world that I could get away with doing this, and it might be accepted. So I'd rather go all the way this way, where I'm totally casual, and you get to see how I'm living my life, and show you some really cool tricks. And as I'm filming it, like we have done, you'll see my my living room. You'll see my backdrop. You'll see Danny filming it. She'll turn it to show her on camera filming me. So I want that more realistic approach, and this is just my opinion. But so you're seeing something that you would never see. Like, I remember seeing Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. They're a married couple, country singers, which a lot of people know.
Yeah.
He did a thing, Zoom, for some award show at his home, I think in Nashville. And they've got a mansion and a half. He actually sat on his diving board out by his pool and sang a song in his jeans with his baseball cap sideways. Because, see, that's what I want. I want, because he can't produce it the way he would do a music video or on CMT award show, he goes the exact opposite.
I love that. And, I see what you're saying.
On a, you know, sit on a diving board, totally make it abstract and not not perfect. Because if you're trying, here's my problem with all these Zoom people, to make a long story longer. People are doing these Zoom shows trying to create the perfect environment as if they were on a national TV show. It's pretty hard to do that. So I'd rather go the opposite way and see me in my real environment. And people go, holy smokes, that's amazing. He has this cool environment where he's on Pawn Stars, everything's edited or YouTube. But now you're sitting at home and, boy, he really is at home. Eating a bagel, you know, he's having a cup of coffee.
Right.
Dogs, you know, whatever. But all of a sudden, because when I saw Tim McGraw do that, and that was early on, we're talking July, August-ish. And I was like, that's cool. He's sitting on his diving board around his pool. His wife's filming it on his Apple phone, right?
Right.
And he sung a song. And I was like, we'll never see Tim McGraw like that again. Because
never, yeah.
There's no need to see it. But I want to see that because I'd rather have that than him trying to make it look professional as home with an Apple phone, which isn't as easy as you can do. So that's my long story short of it. I think go the other way and let people really, if people are fans of yours, let them see a little more
of you.
Industrial. Yeah, exactly. Industrial. And that's the way, that's my only opinion on that. And I think people will be more accepting of that than you trying to make it perfect and have this backdrop that's backwards behind you, the lighting a little shady. And you know what I'm saying? So that's just my two cents on that.
So if you were going to be doing magic then right now, that you would actually then perform it in your robe and right now.
Right here. Like what I'm sitting here in my white robe in my office with a picture of Paris behind me and my filing cabinet behind me. And I would say, hey, good morning. I'm in the office, is what I do. You know, have my coffee and this is what I do. And I'm going to show you some magic tricks. And I just, you know, pick up my glasses, do something here, my phone, show you a little thing here.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd love to see what, you know, Britney Spears has done a lot and maybe too much. Maybe not the right example, but because her videos are crazy sometimes. But it's interesting to see this icon, and she is an icon, whether you love her or hate her, who can sell out a 10,000-seat arena in half an hour with ticket sales. But then you see her in her own house just dancing around like an idiot, like we all do. We've all been that idiot in our homes, right? But
like singing in the shower. Yeah.
Exactly, right? We all do it, right? We all get changed in the morning. You know, we all blow our nose. But it's neat to see somebody that is so well put together when she hits that stage. And her posters are perfect, and her tours sell out. But then you see the haphazard side because she's not trying to go, oh, my God, she's like us. And, okay, she's a bit more of an extreme because I think she's shown more than she necessarily needs to share.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool seeing that side. Even Garth Brooks is another one. You know, he's in his hoodie, which, you know, he's not far off from what he dresses up when he goes on stage. But you see him and Trisha Yearwood, his wife, and they're in their studio at home. And, yeah, it's a little fancier, but it's still just them wearing a hoodie, baseball cap sideways, an acoustic guitar, kind of just jamming out. And yes, he has a massive following, so he'll be accepted anyway. But it's kind of cool to see somebody that can sell out a 50,000-seat arena or Notre Dame, so well produced, and the music's just perfect and beautiful. But him in his home with a guitar, kind of, hey, this is me. I'm waking up, having my coffee. Actually, I'm having a beer. It's noon, and I'm going to play some songs for you. And I think that's the way to go for these Zoom shows, if you can get away with it, sharing your fans or your followers a little bit of the inside that they wouldn't see. It's almost the magic behind the magic, you know?
Right. That's a different perspective, certainly, of looking at it from the standpoint that most of us are trying to make it more professional and seem more like a studio setting.
Yes.
When you're just going the direct opposite and saying, hey, this is my home and welcome to my home and let me just show you a couple of cool things as we kind of walk around. Like you said, maybe someone following you with their phone or a camera or something. And but you've been doing that kind of a thing for so many years already, as you said, with YouTube and TikTok and Instagram and others, so that people have you're used to seeing or filming those kinds of in the moment personal kinds of things. And so it does seem natural, I think, that you continue with that.
Yeah, well, I always tell people, here's what I tell people, and this is my metaphor or whatever you want to call it. You say you go to a shopping mall. I don't care whether it's Walmart or whether it's Macy's or Home Goods or wherever you shop. It could be Dillard's. And you have everything on the wall. It looks beautiful. Everything's on the rack, stacked perfectly. Everything looks amazing. And then in the middle of the store, as you walk in, and there's a huge pile of crap. And it's like 50% off. And it's got for everything from tennis balls to swim shorts to a sweater to a tennis racket. But it's this big pile of stuff. And it's like everything 50% off, final sale, no returns. Where is everyone hanging around? They're hanging around that big pile of stuff because you're looking for that pair of Adidas shorts that was regular $89 that you're going to get for $19. Yet the ones hanging on the wall are the same ones. But it's so perfectly packaged, you go, oh, that's probably going to be a lot of money. It's probably going to be – but I want to find my diamond in the rough. And I think as an artist, I think sometimes your diamond in the rough is to be transparent, to be real, and to let your fans know how you really live and how you enjoy your life. And they go, my God, they're just like me. That's kind of cool. And I think this year has given us that opportunity to share people that this is how we live and this is our other side of the world. It isn't perfect. It isn't amazing. My hair's not always perfect. Or my suits are matching or whatever the hell it is. And I think it's a cool opportunity. So I always look for that idea for people to go, did you just see Murray? He's actually sitting in his robe in his house doing magic tricks. Who would ever do that? He didn't even shave. I'm like, that's why I want you talking about me. I don't want you to. You can see me online looking perfect and all this other crap.
Well, in that perfect lead-in that I was going to ask you, because I've had more than a couple people who have asked me because they know our relationship of saying, is Murray not doing so well? Looks like he's doing landscape work now. He's got his own landscape company.
Yeah. So if you've ever been to my house or my homes, I've landscaped all my homes since I lived in Florida to living in Vegas. And I built fireplaces to ponds to golf courses. It's my hobby. A lot of people go hiking or mountain bike riding, or they do yoga, or they go on these retreats to these cool areas like Sedona. And that's their, you know, that's their zen out moment or whatever they have. And mine has always been working in the yard. You know, I absolutely love it. I put my ripped jeans on and my hat sideways, and either I work on my old cars, yeah, as you know, or I work in the yard. And when this pandemic hit, I have a couple of guys who own landscaping companies who are dear friends of mine. So my buddy said, well, how's landscape business? You know, like, cause you know, people are, are they doing much of their own homes? Said Murray, we've never been busier than in 20 years. I said, you gotta be kidding me. He said, yeah, people have all this government money. They're at home. They want to enjoy their house now. So now they're going, hey, you know what? We should maybe build that patio over here. We should maybe put that pond in. I said, no way. And we were in upstate New York, Lake George area, where my fiance is born and raised for a week. And we were hanging out and we were talking about her dad's house doing some stuff. And I realized everyone asked me about landscaping stuff, because if you could have been to my house, I've done all my own work.
And so yeah, it looks beautiful. Your yard looks wonderful.
And I said, you know, I should really start a company. I said, I just don't have time. So we got the time now, and I thought, you know what? I do have the time now. And people have asked, and most of the stuff I do for free for my friends, because I'm just doing it because I'm helping them out. So I talked to Danny. I said, well, if we start this company, and I did a TV pilot for HGTV 5 years ago called Dirt Dreams. And it's basically where I flip your backyard in 72 hours with five guys, 72 hours, and we basically change your whole backyard into something amazing. And I think the tagline was, for the last 30 years, I've toured the world, creating the coolest illusions on stage. Now, your backyard is my stage. Welcome to Dirt to Dreams. And it was that whole hook of me being a creative person. So anyways, I went back to that and I said, would you be into starting a company with me? We're both in on it, because she's in better shape than I'm in. And I said, yeah, I'm down for any of that. That's great. So we made a company up called Dirt to Dreams Landscaping, made some ads, put it out on Google and Facebook and all that stuff. And literally within 3 weeks, we probably had 5 to 7 contracts in a week.
Wow.
And I said, you got to be kidding me. So we had started this company 4 months ago. And the cool thing with this company is it's something we can do for the next 35 years, you know, because it's another one of our part of our profile. You know, we own properties and I've got my YouTube world, and Danny, my fiance, is a professional masseuse, so she has that company as well. Plus, she's a host on the Strip. And, of course, I got my own shows. But it's something completely different, not in show business, yet it's another creative outlet.
A lot of revenue and streams.
Yeah, right. And it's something I can keep going for the next 35 years till I'm 110, you know, and run the company and have other people work below me. And so, yeah, so we're doing about 7 to 10 contracts a month.
Wow.
And people are asking me if I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm doing better than I ever thought I would, because I never thought I'd start this company in 2020, because I just never had time. And I've had nothing but time. And so instead of doing all those different Zoom shows, I've been creating this other company, and it's been wonderful. We've really enjoyed it. So that's my new venture for 2020, along with writing a children's book, which I just finished writing, and now it's getting illustrated for next year. So
yeah, I was going to come back to that also, because I think that is fascinating then as well. What age group of children is that aimed towards there?
The book is written for age 3 to 5 years old, okay. And the title of the book is called At Nighttime, We're All the Same Size. And it was basically just a joke. So we have rescue chihuahuas and pups, and anyone who watches my Instagram feed probably knows that. And we have a cat as well, and they're all rescues. Well, one is called Bailey. It's a big fluffy dog, big fluffy meaning it's a chihuahua, but it's the biggest of our three chihuahuas. And she's part Papillon and part Chihuahua, and they're all girls. And she's the one that's scared the most. But anybody who stays at our home, or if we're not here taking care of our dogs, the minute you lie down in bed or on the couch, she'll jump up on the back of the couch or run up to the pillows and look at you eye to eye. Because all of a sudden, as a human being, we all know this, but when you're standing up 6 feet tall or 5 feet, you're a giant to these animals.
Right.
But as soon as you lie down, they're actually almost taller than you. They're almost eye level. So when we went to bed, this is the beginning when Danny started staying over at my home, we started a relationship, she was scared of Danny. And as soon as we lied down in bed, she'd now come up to her head and start kissing her forehead. And I'd make a joke saying, oh my God, at nighttime, we're all the same size. Because to the dog's perspective, Danny's now the same size.
Yeah.
You're not worried about the length of her, it's the height. Well, she now is the same height as her eyes. So every time I went to bed and Bailey, my pup, would run up and come up beside Danny, I'd make this little joke before I got into bed. I'd go, oh my God, at nighttime, we're all the same size. And I'd lie in bed going, yeah, I should write a children's book about that, because it's pretty true that is even as a metaphor. I don't care whether you're fat, tall, powerful, not powerful, weak, strong, whether you're a child or whether you're someone that's 102, if you see somebody eye to eye, you're really all the same size if you listen and you understand and you respect each other. And I thought, you know, I've never written a book in my life. I'm not that great of a writer to begin with. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna try to write this book. So about 4 or 5 months ago, I just started writing the book, and it's basically about animals, and it's about size relation from either a butterfly, a mouse, a giraffe, a bear, a dog. And the whole tagline is, at nighttime, we're all the same size. And the very end page, the metaphor is, no matter whether you're small, large, big, petite, at nighttime, we're all the same size, because when you see eye to eye with someone, you can understand them a lot better. And that's the whole metaphor of the whole book. So, so that's it. And, so now it's being illustrated. I wrote the thing, and it's about 35 pages, which is an average length of a book for children's books. I've done all the research. You know, we have a publisher already. I'm still open to looking at other publishers, but we have one offer on the table, and I have a very dear friend of mine doing the illustrations, and hopefully we're going to have it out maybe spring next year or so. So yeah, something totally I never thought about doing, and I didn't want to be a writer, but it was just a funny thing that I thought, you know, I should really put this in writing, because when we have kids, this is something I would like to
share with them, something a dad had written. And I think that's important, certainly, that you're talking about when you're looking eye to eye, that we are all equal. And whenever I speak with children, sometimes, even when if I'm doing a children's show or just talking to a child, if you kind of kneel down on one knee and kind of look them eye to eye, that they pay more attention to you. And I think that you can kind of get, when literally on their same level, that they can respect you, and because you're showing that you respect them.
Correct. And that goes for anything, whether it be somebody in a wheelchair or somebody in a hospital bed or just someone who's a lot shorter than you, you know, to just respect their intelligence, their mind, and their thoughts, not judge them on what they look like or their size or their height.
And where their eyes are. So like you said, when you're in a hospital bed, that you'll be sitting in a chair beside them so that your eyes are about the same level as well.
Exactly.
So they're not having to crane their neck up or look at you or whatever and feel there's something subliminal about that. That's very good. I like that.
Yeah.
That'll be coming out sometime then this next year then as well. Another thing I know that you've been involved in has been with the animals shelter and also parades and things, that there was an annual event that I know you and James DeMere and I think maybe Lance and Fielding, I don't know who all was involved with this in past years. And that was a fundraiser that you did, I think it was for the animal shelter there in Vegas. Can you tell me about, I assume that you're not doing that this year, or will that be virtual?
Not this year. So it's for Friends for Life Humane Society, and it's a society I've rescued most of my pups from. And I met them eight, nine years ago when I rescued my first pup from them. I've rescued 5 long-haired chihuahuas so far, and I always make a joke that I've rescued 5 long-haired chihuahuas, and if I get another 2, I've got a husky. And because I like chihuahuas, and you know, it's what it is. But so I met these boys, Ron and Robert, who run Friends for Life here in Vegas, and they're just a very small nonprofit no-kill shelter, and I'm all about no-kill shelters. And so I wanted to raise some money. I wanted to help them out directly because, you know, we go to a lot of charities, you know, or even St. Jude's. I'll sign a check for $100 or $500 or whatever, or I'll go to these things where I'm a celebrity on a red carpet, but all I'm doing is showing up. I'm really not doing much. I might buy a silent auction item, you know.
You were involved with the Midnight Children or something like that, too. What was that?
Yeah, Children of the Night, that's right. Yeah, it was out of L.A., you know, these children that have been abducted or taken under false pretenses in LA, you know, and it happens a lot, you know, and my publisher at the time, Cheryl Kagan, was very involved. So a lot of people, I help in that sense. And so I do a charity show every year around Christmas, and all the money, all the profits go to Friends for Life. And it's been very, this would have been our ninth year doing it. And so last year, it was Lance Burton, James DeMare, Piff the Magic Dragon, Fielding West, myself, a lot of great acts. And we did it at the Laugh Factory, and all the money goes to Friends for Life. And it's nice to buy blankets and food and stuff like that. And it really just helps for the extra costs. So I'm a huge, huge supporter, but I'm a really huge supporter of rescue animals and no kill shelters. You know, we have a real problem still in the United States with a lot of kill shelters. And I don't see a need for kill shelters, anymore. And that's my own opinion, you know. But I know it's expensive to run shelters and keep it all going, but in our nation, which is the first world nation, I don't think there should be any need for killing animals. You know, there's always a place for them, you know, or to be taken care of. You know?
Well said. So you're not doing the show then this year, and there's not being anything virtually done.
No, you know, once again, I go back to that virtual thing again. You know, there's so many charities, and I've been a part of probably 9 or 10 of them here, and they're raising money, but they're not raising the money that they could be for the amount of work put in. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's not worth it at all. It's just a lot of work for the return. So sometimes, you know, I'd rather just write them a check for $1,000 this Christmas and say Merry Christmas, you know, versus putting 7 people together, getting the Zooms and getting all that put together to make $400, you know, because everyone's tight on money this year. It's a different year for a lot of people. And so every year what I did do this year, every year I go and buy a real Christmas tree and I deliver it to them. They have a big compound out in Pahrump, which is about 45 minutes away from Vegas. That's where they house all their dogs. And so every year I give them a Christmas tree. I put them in the back of my truck. And this year, I don't know if you noticed it in Texas, but Christmas trees, real Christmas trees, are a lot more money this year. And I don't know whether because there's a shortage of them or what the deal is, or maybe there's more people buying them because they're home now. So I decided this year to buy them a really nice imitation tree so they can use every year. So I just dropped off to them about a week ago. So that was my contribution this year. So
yeah. I know also one of the things, then you help the homeless, and you have done things in going delivering sandwiches and food for them around the season then as well.
Yes. Yeah, I do. Every year we go down to an area down here and we give sandwiches out or blankets, or like the last couple of years, my mother knitted beanies, little toques for them. Mm-hmm. And we call them toques if you're in Canada, you know. And then I think the year before that, she made mittens, over 100 mittens. And this year, of course, because of the COVID and everything else, we really haven't done a lot. But I've done probably 9 or 10 charities virtually where I have jumped in and helped or pre-taped something for people. Actually, the next charity coming out is for Opportunity Village here in Las Vegas. It will be streaming online, but it's going to be on Channel 8 out of Vegas here, and it's called A Very Sunny Christmas. And I think Darius Rucker's going to be on at Little Big Town, Wayne Newton, myself, me and Danny. And it's basically all the money goes to Opportunity Village, which helps underprivileged people or people that have handicap disabilities, you know, and it's a big charity.
So with all the things that you've been doing and the things we've been talking about over here, a question I'm sure that some people have got to be asking is, when do you sleep?
When I'm dead. I will sleep when I'm dead, Scott. So there's your answer. I love being busy. If anyone knows who I am a workaholic, but I work hard and I play hard, you know. It's like now, I'll be working today up until about 5 or 6 o'clock, but then, you know, at 7 o'clock night, you know, me and Danny may go for a nice drink and some sushi over at a place called Kona Grill here in Vegas, and I'll shut it right down.
You've taken me there.
I have, yes. Yeah. It's one of my favorite places, and it's nice and it's close, and it's easy to, you know, get to, and we have a good happy hour. But I'll work hard like this, you know, right from the get-go, whether I'm in my robe or not. But then at 6:30, I'll catch up and go, that's it. And then I won't touch anything till tomorrow morning. You know, and it's just the way I do it. But I have to feel like I've done a lot before I can actually put my phone down and sit and, you know, have a nice glass of wine and watch, you know, A Wonderful Life or White Christmas or whatever the heck I'm watching, you know. But that's just how I work. I want to work hard and then I want to relax and do nothing, you know. So it's just a balance.
So when things get back into the swing, as we start to wrap up over here in this next year in 2021, that assuming that a little at a time, they'll start letting more and more people fill up the theater and that kind of a thing. Do you expect that you're going to be doing anything more differently, or do you have some plans for expansion? I mean, you're already talking about how that you have got something else that you've kind of run the gamut, I guess, already with the prank thing, and you're going to be doing something else. But aside from that, I mean, what news on the horizon for Murray?
Well, we have a new show in Canada we're working on. We're pitching right now. It's another magic-based travel-type show. A lot of my pitches are similar to that, so that's in the works right now. Of course, a children's book, and then, of course, this new YouTube series, which is basically, you know, like for 5 years, like I said, we're doing the police pranks and parking things. This is going to be the same vein, but not that hook. It'll be a totally different hook for what we're doing, and we're looking forward to launching it. We think it's going to go really big and large. And yes, of course, there'll be people that love it or hate it, but I'm okay with that. I built my career on people loving and hating me. But it's a new venture. It's a new hook that's out there right now. So we're going to launch that in January, and we'll see how that goes. And we'll be doing our shows again. Of course, my show's at Tropicana here in Vegas, but then we're going to be going back to Fantasy, which should be opening in January, which once these things, you know, expand more, we can have more people in our audiences. And also, the good news is, as you've seen this week, the vaccine's coming out. And whether you believe in the vaccine or not, it is something there that will give us a peace of mind and hopefully put this, you know, virus to bed over the next 6 to 8 months. And hopefully by fall next year, you know, I can give you a hug, Scott, and not give you
anything. Right. I look so forward to that. I certainly do. And I guess continuing with Masters of Illusion, that's going to be probably another season, I'm sure.
I heard that through the grapevine. I'm not sure if that's public or not, but I heard that it's a successful year again, and they're looking at shooting next year. So that's exciting. So once again, I'll have to look at some new effects and new stuff I can do, because I love that show with Gabe Blackstone, Dave Martin producing it. And it's a fun series. It's almost like a family tradition. We always film it in January, February, we get to see some magicians and friends that we love and get to hang out with. It's kind of like summer camp, you know. So, yeah, so we're looking forward to doing that as well. So.
Sounds like a full year and a lot of stuff that's going to be on the horizon for 21, and so that's great. Well, Murray, thank you very much. I'm glad you took some time over here to kind of share with what's been going on with you and in Vegas and prospectively then. It's you're looking good, and looks
thanks.
Like you've been exercising still during all of this.
Yeah, so. I have. Yeah, well, I got to keep it. When you have a showgirl fiance, you know, and soon to be wife, you know, and she works out like 2 times a day religiously, it's one of those things that definitely keeps you motivated. You're like, you know what, I'm going to have to hit the gym today, you know.
Speaking of which, is there a date in mind for the nuptials?
Well, we want to, you know, we'd love to get married sooner or later, you know.
Sure.
We'd love to get married in the spring of next year, which obviously is coming up, if not the fall. But our big thing is not so much the wedding. We're not planning, I think, a super huge wedding, but we want a great party. We want to have a huge party. And we're looking at maybe doing the Liberace Mansion here in Las Vegas.
Sure.
Or at a really cool theater downtown. Of course, you'll be invited. You'll get an invite. But that's what we want. And we want to do it safely. And we have people have a great time and not worried about leaving, you know, with some virus, you know. So that's our biggest concern. So that's kind of what we're kind of basing things on. So we may get married, maybe do a reception later. We kind of want it all to be at once. So that's kind of where we're at. So we're hoping spring. That's our fingers crossed. So.
Well, let's hope so. Hope for that.
Yes.
Amir, thanks again very much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas, Scott, and thanks for everything. You know I love you, and Happy New Year to you, and we cannot wait to see you here in Vegas sometime soon.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year then to you, too, and I should say Murray Christmas.
<laughs> Of course.
Love to say that. It's over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Murray Sawchuk from Las Vegas. This is Scotty out. Well, that was fun. Thank you very much, Murray, again for being my guest again this year. It's always great to get the chance to chat with you. And I also love having you as a guest because I don't have to ask a lot of questions. You have so much to say, and I really enjoy listening to everything that you always share with us each year and telling us not only about social media, but also about what's happening in Las Vegas. And I enjoy these little updates. Well, again, as I mentioned to you listeners on the front end of this podcast, that I really haven't done anything that has been topical since this whole coronavirus pandemic began in March, and that's whenever that I had done one that was exclusively about the coronavirus. It might be kind of interesting to go back for you to hear that one from back then and compare what we thought was going to be happening to what we actually are in then right now. And again, I have avoided actually talking about this kind of situation we're in right now until now, and probably shouldn't be expecting any more anytime soon either. Well, I also mentioned in front of this podcast that we had a few contests that were running, and one of them is an opportunity to win three ebooks from John Gaspard, which is his new Eli Marks mystery novel about Eli Marks. And this is the seventh one in the series, and this one, again, is just a whole lot of fun, and this will be a great book that you'll enjoy. And because that a lot of times that we are unable to include international listeners in the contest because the shipping is prohibitive to send books and everything, we have a contest or had a contest that was exclusively for those who are our international listeners. And so this way that we tried to at least award one, and maybe more, to international listeners. The other contest, we had the two ebooks that were going to be going to everyone else. In other words, that international listeners could enter twice if they wanted into not only the one exclusively for them, but also the one that was going to be for the rest of the world. Well, you understand. The point is that the contest is over, and it's time to announce the winners for those. And then we have another contest I'm going to announce in just a moment. But first of all, we're going to announce the international winners winner and also the other two. And those names are Stephen Maines, Michael Smukler, and from Canada, Robert Lamar. Congratulations. John Gaspard will be getting in touch with you, if he hasn't already, in order to give you the link where you can download those ebooks. And next, this is a contest that was offered by Charlie Randall from H&R Magic Books. And even though that H&R Magic Books really isn't a going concern the way that they used to some years ago with Richard Hatch and Charlie Randall, that Charlie is still publishing some books. And so this is Nick Trost's Subtle Card Creations, volume number 8, and he has graciously donated 6 volumes of this book, and here again, because this is a hardcover book, was limited just to those in the United States, and so the winners of those books are Greg Lancaster, David Wright, Bill Van Gorder, Edgar Humes, Fred Rosenbaum, and Brent Chackert. Congratulations to all the winners, and also thank each of you who had entered the contest, and sorry that not everybody can win, but there are only so many to go around. So this has been just a wonderful holiday season, which is different from any that we have had in our lifetimes. It's pretty darn amazing. I don't know what to say, and it's difficult. I know we've had different shutdowns around the world at different times that have eased restrictions, and then they tightened them again and back and forth. And with the new vaccines that are going to be coming out, let's hope that that's going to be something that will allow us to get back out into the world, and so that perhaps next year, in the year 2021, that we will start to get back into having magic conventions and opportunities for us to get together and talk with each other on a personal basis and shake hands and give everybody a hug. And so this is the season of love and joy, and I want to wish each of you a very Merry Christmas here on this December 24th in 2020. And however that you are able to spend it, whether you choose to spend it with family and friends, or whether that you choose to stay at home and quarantine, or however that you are going to celebrate, I wish you the best. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to stay on Santa's nice list all year through. Ho, ho, ho! Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Ho, ho, ho! This is Santa out! Ho, ho, ho!